Hi, this is Andrew Sandoval, and I am presenting the Monkees RhinoCast today. This is the 40th anniversary of the Monkees, their debut on television and debut on records. And Rhino has not only a series of reissues coming out, but a number of special events and these podcasts. And today is the inaugural podcast, and I can't think of nobody better to kick things off with than my friend Bobby Hart, who, with his partner Tommy Boyce, created the Monkees sound. And it all started with the song that we're going to hear now in a special version, Theme from the Monkees.
Education.
One, two, one, two, three.
Here we come, walk down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet.
All right. So, Bobby, welcome to our plush RhinoCast podcast, Monkees Studios.
Pleasure to be here. It's beautiful.
So, can you believe it that it's been 40 years since you wrote that song, Theme for the Monkees?
It really flew by. It's been a great 40 years.
Yeah. Now, you still live on the street where you wrote that, right?
That's true. I've kind of in a rut. I've lived on the same street or within a block away from it ever since 1965 when I moved back out here from New York.
It's funny. I feel like I've been sucked into some kind of vortex because I've been living in that area now for about 10 years. And I live right around the corner for a number of years from Dean Jeffries where they customized the Monkeymobile.
Right, sure.
And then right as I was moving out this last time, I found out that my landlord had played keyboards on the Dolan Jones Boyce and Hart record. So
really?
I think that there must be some monkey's curse. That
what
I'm,
was his name? What's his name?
His name is Joey Carbone.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, yeah, sure. He traveled with us a bit, too.
Yeah, so it's a very small world.
It is. Mickey Dolenz also lived a catacorner across the street from that first house.
Yeah.
The boathouse that Tommy and I lived in.
Oh, you lived in one of those boathouses?
Yeah, the end one there.
Wow. I actually went and looked. There were some of those for sale recently. I went and looked at them.
That's right. Well, I think that one might be for sale.
It was very creaky.
Probably so. They're getting up in age like the rest of us. I feel a little creaky myself.
So that song, Theme from the Monkees, you were walking down?
We were walking down to the park, the Paseo de Coinga Park, right down there in the Coinga Pass. We often like to write au naturel, as you were saying, out in the sunlight. And but by the time we got to the park, we pretty much had that one nailed. We were walking along and snapping the fingers and that walking beat, and Tommy started singing, "Here we come," snapping his fingers, and I started the mock hi-hat. By the time we got there, we had most of it done.
And you guys had just gotten a call from, I guess, Bert Schneider or Bob Rafelson to just do these pilot songs. It was kind of a...
Lester Sellers sent us over to the Columbia Pictures lot to meet with Bert Schneider. Lester was the head of Columbia, Screen Gems Columbia Music. We were signed writers at that time, Tommy Boyce and myself. And so we went in to meet Bert, and it was a very short meeting. Basically, he just said, have you seen Help in Hard Day's Night? Well, yeah. So he said, we want to do that kind of filmic tech, those techniques and madcap romps and kind of American Beatles on television. We got it right away. I mean, we were excited at the prospect of marrying a television series with selling records. You know, we knew what happened when Ricky Nelson sang his first song on the Yazzie and Harriet show. So Tommy, you know, being the spokesman pretty much, convinced Bert right away that we were his guys and we'd come highly recommended. So he said, we need three songs for the pilot.
So now you did the pilot songs in October of 65 in that era. And the pilot, they sold it to NBC in February of 66. And in June of 66, the tapes actually started rolling for you guys to do albums. And although there were some other producers that tried working with the Monkees, you were the guys who really worked with the Monkees.
Well, we kept, you know, Donnie Kirshner, who was the big boss in the New York corporate offices, was not really involved, as you say, until 66, the middle of 66. And after the project was sold, he was the music supervisor for all Screen Gems television shows at that time. So he flew out to see what was up. And we were led to believe we could produce the records as well as write the songs. But Donnie said, you guys don't really have a track record as producers. You've written hits, but you don't haven't produced hits. So we got to bring in some guys who are heavy hitters. And that ate up pretty much the rest of the year trying to find the right guys. All the time we're pulling on his coat sleeves, telling him, hey, we're the ones who originated the songs for the show, for the pilot show, and we know what we're doing, and let us do it. And finally, basically, he had no choice, and he gave it back to us.
And then you guys start cutting the records, I think, the end of June of 66 and through to July. The very last session you did for the first album that we are reissuing today, in fact, is the release date of the new reissues. July 25th, you guys recorded Last Train to Clarksville. And on August 16th, which is tomorrow, you released Last Train to Clarksville as the very first Monkees single, as the very first thing that anybody ever heard of the Monkees.
Right.
And it's been 40 years. I mean, can you believe that it's all this time later and it's still like a...
I'm actually very grateful, you know, that people still can hum along and have it blurring out of their cell phones. And in fact, I have it on my cell phone. It's great that it's held up. It's great that we were able to write a lot of songs in that era that were married to visuals, and that's helped a lot in keeping the music alive.
Now, when you originally released Last Train to Clarksville as a single, it was in mono, and that's what everybody heard on the radio.
Right.
And today's releases, you will once again be able to have Last Train to Clarksville in mono, and we're going to listen to a few seconds of what it sounds like in mono.
All right.
All right, so that was Last Train to Clarksville in mono from the new Monkees Deluxe Edition. Do you remember doing separate mono and stereo mixes at the time?
No, mono was the medium because FM wasn't around, or it was very in its infant stages. So we were mixing for AM radio, and you only heard it in mono. You had one speaker in your car, and that's as far as we were concerned. That's how we were going to sell the record, is getting it sounding good in the radio, on the car radios.
Right.
So we would spend all our time on the mono mix, and oftentimes just turn it over to the engineer to split it out and try to make a pseudo stereo out of it.
Right, and I also noticed that a lot of the like the stereo ones, especially on the first album, the vocals are really loud in the mix. I wondered if that was sort of a symptom. Did you guys do mixes of your productions for the television show as well, or?
I can't remember. We were using four-track, and so probably we tried to keep the vocals separate as much as we could, and they probably had some control over how they mixed it on the show.
Now, you've been delving back into your past a bit lately. Your latest project is, I think, a book.
It is a book, yeah. I'm writing a book called My Journey to Stardom and Back and 101 Famous People That I Met Along the Way. And the reason I'm doing that is because it's a disguised autobiography, and I try to trick you into reading my life story. So another fellow is writing my autobiography and has been working on that. But I had been working for years and, you know, writing things here and there, and so I wanted to continue that, and so I wanted to find a different slant, not to compete with my biographer. So I came up with that.
Now, Tommy wrote a book years and years ago about how to write a hit song and sell it. And
yeah.
I mean, how can you top the tales of celebrities in that?
I don't intend to top it. In fact, I in my preface, I said something like Tommy wrote a book something like this few years ago. I was referring to another book he wrote called The Greatest Rock and Roll Stories Never Told. And I said, probably his stories are better than mine because he was probably a better storyteller for number one, and number two, because he made most of it up.
I got to speak with Tommy, and I never got to really talk with him in person, but I talked with him on the phone a lot of times. And he's just really an amazing person.
Yeah.
And you guys had an incredible string of songs and an incredible teamwork that you had going in the 60s. Some of the songs Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart wrote were Come a Little Bit Closer for Jane the Americans, and Bobby on His Own was a collaborator on Hurt So Bad, which a lot of people have heard, and also Tommy came up with one of his early collaborators with Peaches and Cream. And together you guys obviously came up with a lot of songs for the Monkees: Last Train to Clarksville, Theme from the Monkees, Words, and the next one we're going to hear is called Valerie. That was Valerie from the brand new deluxe reissue of More of the Monkees, and that's a specially brand new remixed version of Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart's original production of Valerie. Now, that came out later as a single in 1968 as a remake, but this version that we just heard a bit of was played on the radio and could have been the next Monkees single. What happened?
Can you tell the two versions apart? You've heard them recently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a big difference. Well, there's the horns,
yeah.
But I think the original's got a lot of punch to it.
Yeah, I always thought it was the better version. What happened was, of course, as most people know, the Monkees, at the peak of their success or at the dawning of their success, kind of pulled a coup and said, we want to now write and produce and have control of our own recording career. And so at that point, of course, we were no longer allowed to produce records for them. They did come to us, thankfully, for every album. They asked us for material, and we have songs on almost every album. But we had already recorded Valerie, so it was not allowed to be released. However, a couple of years later, when their career had peaked and was on the other side, and they were looking for a hit, Lester Sell remembered Valerie and said, there's a hit in the can, but we can't put it out, because we've given them the rights to produce their own records. So you guys have to go back in the studio and try to replicate it and make it exactly like it was. But this time you won't take credit on the Musicians Union contract as producers.
Now, I've grown up with the Monkees records and love them to death. And then over the years found out more and more about how they were made from talking to people like you and getting to meet people like Lester Sill and Tommy and so on. But I think it really mentioned should be made of the great instrumentation, the great band that you guys had at the time. Do you want to speak about some people?
Sure. Sure. The band – well, I'll go back a couple of years when I was a background singer for Teddy Randazzo in Vegas and other show lounges around the world. And I was introduced to Teddy's band. It was a trio that had been called Jerry McGee and the Cajuns. It was Jerry on guitar, Larry Taylor on bass, Larry, who later became founding member of Canned Heat,
right,
and Billy Lewis on drums. Just a great little trio. And so I worked with them a number of years. When I came back to California to join Tommy at Screen Gems, shortly after, now, Teddy stopped touring, and the three guys arrived in L.A. So we would start we would play clubs around L.A. And after a while, we decided, well, we'll give ourselves a name and try to get a record deal. So we called ourselves the Candy Store Prophets. It was Jerry, Billy, and Larry, and I was playing Hammond B3 and doing the singing in these clubs. And that's when the Monkees Project came about. So we decided we would take the opportunity to use these guys in the studio on the Monkey tracks, and we augmented them with two other guitar players, one Wayne Irwin, mm-hmm. who we got because he knew how to do those feedback psychedelic kind of sounds, and Louis Sheldon, who was just an unbelievable all-around technical guitar player, and he's the fellow who did the flamenco licks on Valerie that we just heard.
An incredible solo.
Yeah. Probably better than the first version than the second one. It was hard for him to try to remember what he did. he's the guy who came up with the Clarksville lick when we needed a Beatlesque intro. Just a great guitar player who went on to be a great producer, produced a number of hits for Seals and Croft.
Right.
Louis Sheldon. So then when Monkees took over their own recording careers, then Tommy and I were asked to be recording artists ourselves, and we started cutting records for A&M. And so those guys then became the Boyce and Hart traveling band and recording band.
Right. Now, your A&M days are covered on a great CD from Revola that I had the pleasure of working on with you about a year ago.
Right.
And I want to also mention that we lost our buddy Billy Lewis about a year ago.
That's true.
So that's we wish him well.
Absolutely.
And, Jerry McGee was later in the Ventures.
Right. That's still is, as far as I know. I think they go to Japan once a year. Whether they want to or not, that's their standing invitation.
And Wayne Irwin has a song on the new deluxe edition of More of the Monkees, which is called Teeny Tiny Gnome.
Right.
Actually,
yeah.
It's correctly titled Kicking Stones, which we had in the incorrect title on the old reissues. And in addition to some of the other obscure bonus tracks we dug up for More of the Monkees, we have your original mix of Ladies' Aid Society, which I guess kind of brought to a close your first bout of producing the Monkees.
We were just going on. We didn't really know all the politics that was happening in the background, and so we were continuing to record for their second album, not realizing that Donnie had producers all over town also recording for the same project. So we were doing, we're trying to do a well-rounded album and looking for a Ringo Starr type novelty song for the album, and so. On its own, it probably seems a little strange that we would record a song like Ladies' Aid Society.
Well, we also dug up in going through tapes. We're always trying to find something new that people haven't heard. We found the original mono mix of Teardrop City, which was later a single for the Monkees in early 1969, but was actually recorded way back in late 66 and was recorded as original tempo, very slow and bluesy.
Right.
And nobody has heard it until today officially. So
great.
We're going to hear a bit of it right now.
All right.
That was Teardrop City off of the new deluxe reissue of More of the Monkees. It's a bonus track. And do you remember the original slow version of it as opposed to the...
Yeah, that's that kind of the way we wrote it. That's also Wayne Irwin and Tommy and I singing the falsetto parts as also on Clarksville and a number of the other songs.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember the decision to speed it up for the later single, or were you involved in that part?
Probably just when it was going to come out as a single, they wanted to make it a little more... up-tempo. I don't know why.
It sounds more like Clarksville when it's sped up.
Yeah. It didn't mean – it wasn't written to be a Clarksville clone.
Right. And you guys did – Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart did a great A&M version of that.
Thank you.
To look out for if you can. And after you completed your productions for More of the Monkees and somehow you only got two songs on the album.
Right.
Out of all of the productions, you did tons of productions, which – all are included for the most part on our new reissue.
Great.
Things like Apples, Peaches, Bananas, and Pears,
yeah.
And the original version of Words, and so on and so on. You did go on tour with the Monkees in late 66. Can you tell me about that?
That's true. When they decided to take the guys out to play concerts, Ward Sylvester of Raybert Productions called and asked if the Candy Store Profits basically would like to go out, open the show, and also back the guys in their solo numbers. They wanted to play their own instruments to combat the growing rumors that they couldn't play. And so they played their own instruments except for solo numbers for each of them, and we backed them on those.
Now, you guys did a short tour in late 66 going into early 67, and then you played some more dates in 67. And we dug something out of the archives of you playing some organ here with the Candy Store Profits,
right,
backing up Mickey on I Got a Woman. Was a rarity.
Yeah, little Vox organ that I was standing behind, yeah.
From Bobby's hometown of Phoenix, Arizona.
Right.
In January of 67. And, of course, after that, the Boysenhart got the gumption to go to A&M and start releasing their own records, such as Out and About, which came out in April of 67. And they came back and returned as producers for the Monkees in late 67. To do many more things like a new version of Through the Looking Glass and Valerie and Me Without You and things that maybe we'll get into on a future podcast, hopefully.
Great.
And what else are you up to these days? Are you doing any songwriting or just book writing? Or
I'm concentrating the book writing and a project that three partners and myself have been working on for some time, which is a musical play. It's actually a destination event that we've come up with, designed a traveling Cirque du Soleil type structure that's not really a tent but looks like a tent, and the audience is immersed in inside the rainforest, and the action kind of goes on all around them, and it's kind of an exciting project but a very expensive one, so we're continuing to work on that.
Well, it sounds exciting. I'm really grateful that you could come down and share some time with me on this momentous occasion.
Pleasure. It's 40 years, like you said, they flew by.
Well, thank you very much, Bobby, and I hope I talk to you soon.
Thank you.